We're looking today at our motto verse, which is certainly down here. I don't know whether there's any upstairs. Maybe you should... You haven't got one upstairs. Right, you need to complain to the church council that there aren't enough motto verses upstairs. Now that I'm not on the church council, I'm all for people complaining to the church council about things that need to be done around here. We're going to be looking at our motto verse. So what's the verse all about? Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Is this a verse about worry? Is it a verse that's designed to help us cope with anxiety in our lives? We thought last week about the sheltering feathers, about the wings that protect. We thought about the many things that particularly as a fellowship, that we're going through at the moment that make us anxious and worried about what's going to happen next. Is this a verse to help us manage our worry? Is this a verse about how to pray? Is it a verse that sort of links the balance between praying with requesting for things, giving thanks for things? Is this a verse primarily to try and encourage us to pray more? It begins with the words, do not. Is it a verse about rules? Baptists love rules, don't they? Never been in a church where there are quite so many rules about how everything has to be done. And the number of emails I have telling me which one I've transgressed at different times is amazing. Maybe this is one of the Baptist verses, one of the great Baptist verses of the Bible about the rules, the things we should do and the things we should not do. Talks about hearts and minds. And a lot of times when we talk about hearts and minds, we're talking about commitment. And maybe this is a verse that's reminding us about the sort of commitment we should be making as Christians. And maybe it's a verse there to really sort of help us to realize at times that we've let things slip and it's time to be more committed. What is this verse all about? What was in the minds of the elders and Andy when they suggested that we have this verse as a motto verse for the year? And you'll notice that we haven't dived straight into our motto verse. We didn't have it on the first Sunday of the year. I wonder why that is. Why have we waited a while before we started to look at our motto verse for the whole year? What is it all about? Do the posters help? So there are lots and lots of posters. If you go online, you'll find that all kinds of people have turned these posters in this verse into posters. And usually you get some idea about what the artist thinks is important about the verse. I don't know whether the elders and Andy had anything to do with which verses went in, which words went in big letters on our walls and which were smaller letters. Whoever it is really quite keen on prayer and petition and less interested in thanksgiving. That's a smaller word than the prayer and the thanksgiving. Is that a sort of a sense of priority? In the poster that we have up there, which came from, I think, Alex on Faith was the website that it came from, this person thinks the word but is a really important word. And, you know, can we use these kind of posters to help us work out what's the most important part of this verse? I do like it when you've got a verse to go through and to take each word in turn and to make that give that the emphasis, make that the most important word in the verse and see what happens as you go through a verse giving emphasis to one word after another. That's quite a nice way of trying to get to grips with the verse. Perhaps it's a puzzle of some sort. Perhaps there's lots of different doors to this verse. There's a worry door, and if you're worried, you can go into it. And perhaps there's a prayer door, and if you want to know more about praying, you can go in that way. Perhaps there's a rules door, and if you're a Baptist, you can go into that door. And the thing about these puzzles is that usually, once you get inside, you find that it all comes together. And a lot of life is like that, isn't it? When you first learn to drive, it's all about the rules. And then slowly the rules fall back and you realize that it's about being aware of what's happening around you. It's about being, I've got a driving instructor here, haven't we, Peter? It's all about that, isn't it? Situational awareness. Yeah, that's right. It's not about the rules in quite that way. And sometimes we go in thinking this is all about one thing and we discover there's other things in there. Perhaps there are lots of ways into this particular verse. And one of the reasons why we've got it for a whole year is to spend some time maybe exploring the different angles to this particular verse. Your kids are not very old before they start to want to talk in some way. And they mimic stuff. They will mimic your words, even when their word box is very empty. I remember once when Alex, you'll see that the boys are all quite tall now, but there was a time when he was about that high. And just before he started filling up his word box, I remember he came to me one day, and he was just sort of jabbering. And it sounded like it should make sense, but they weren't any words at all. And the facial expressions were right, and the earnestness was right. And there was this sense that I've got to communicate. I've got to say something or die. And of course, in due time, they do talk, don't they? They don't stop talking after a while, do they? They are very, very articulate after a while. So what's it all about? What's this talking about? One of the really interesting things is that parents don't sit their kids down and teach them to talk. They seem to want to do that themselves. You know, you don't say, I need to have a talk with you, son. You've got to learn to talk because one day you're going to worry about all kinds of things. There's going to be a mortgage and terrible things are going to happen in your life. And you need to be able to talk to somebody about them. And we're going to teach you to talk because it's a strategy against worry. We don't do that with our kids, do we? We don't try and teach them to talk. We don't say, here are the rules. You know, I before E, except after C when it sounds like C, or whatever the rule is, okay? We don't really hit them with rules about talking. There are rules, and they learn the rules, and at times we have to remind them sometimes about some of the rules, but we don't teach them to talk because we want them to know the rules, do we? In fact, we don't teach them at all. They want to. Why do they want to learn? Why is there this tremendous innate drive? We don't know why, but we know that our brains are wired up automatically, particularly before puberty, to be able to interpret language. And it really doesn't matter what language you're born into, your brain unscrambles those sounds and is working on turning them into meaningful communication. It's not about commitment either, is it? If you want to be a member of this family, you've got to learn to talk, and here's how we talk in this family. You know, you don't do that kind of thing, do you? They just start to jabber, and the jabber turns into words. And actually, the talking has got nothing to do with any of these things. Yes, it does help with the worry. Yes, there are rules. Yes, it can be about commitment. When you say, I do, when people are standing here, and they say, I do, that's a commitment, isn't it? It's a commitment that goes on for they know not how long. But it's not about that. It's about the relationship. And I think that this letter is about relationship. It's a letter that Paul writes to a church because they were worried about him and they sent him a gift. And actually, it's a thank you letter. And he doesn't really get around to saying thank you letter. In fact, we're in chapter 4 of the letter and he still hasn't gotten around to what he started to write for. He gets onto that in about another 3 or 4 verses where he says thank you to them. And they sent a person, they sent Epaphras, and he brings a gift and he looks after Paul. And actually Epaphras gets really ill, and the church starts to worry about Epaphras instead of Paul because he's so ill. It's all about the relationship, and we'll come back to that. I really enjoyed the time when our boys started to learn to talk. And one of the things that that I enjoyed was the way that they would unscramble stuff, and they would use very few words, but they would make them work very effectively. And Danny said, I may have told these stories before, right? There's a story about the guy going to the party, isn't there? And he says to his wife, "Don't stop me when I say stop me," if you've heard this one before. And so if you have heard it, you can let me know afterwards, because I don't think I've told these stories in this church, but I may have done, because I have told them in different places. But when Joel was about 4, and Nathan must have been about 2.5, and Alex hadn't appeared yet, Joel wanted a bike, and he'd been sort of teasing for a bike. And so we went to the bike shop, and Joel was really excited. He was jumping up and down. He was looking at all of the bikes, and we were selecting a bike for him. But in the meantime, Nathan was sort of making his way around. And as I say, he was about 2.5, and of course, they're like little Duracell bunnies at that stage, aren't they? They just keep moving. Everything sort of is moving the whole time. And he sort of works his way to, there was a really tiny bike, and there was a time when he was very tiny. And he sort of started to sort of try and get onto this bike. And it took him maybe, while we were sort of working with Joel to choose a bike, maybe over 5 minutes or 10 minutes, he got himself on. Have I told this story here? Okay, you're all very polite. So finally, you would have heard it before. He sort of pulls himself onto it. And he gets himself seated up onto it, and then he looks up, and he had a really deep voice, and he said, "I ride bike." 3 words. 3 very expensive words. Because they meant that we ended up buying 2 bikes instead of 1. And that's what communication does, right? It puts you in touch with Almighty God, who is able to deal with the stresses in our lives. And it's all about establishing that relationship. I ride bike. And there are times when the words will give out. In the psalm that we read this: "He will call on me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him." That's the language of relationship. He will call, and I will answer. And that's what this verse is about. It's about having a relationship which is one based on calling and answering. He will call, and I will answer. You don't need a lot of words to say some very, very profound things. Have I told the milkman story here? Have I? So, when the boys were very little, we used to have a milkman. We had a house where there were French windows at the back, and we sort of ate at the back of the house, looking out onto a little courtyard with a gate like that that let people in. And Joel's word box had got some words in it, but it wasn't sort of really sorted out. And so milk, which he liked, he called lunk, lunk. And the purveyor of milk, who came in every morning clanking his bottles, was Lunkin. And when Lunkin came in, it was a great time at breakfast, and people would wave at him, and he'd wave back. He was a tall, sort of gangly, easygoing guy, and he'd come in, when he'd leave the lunk at the back door, and everybody would wave at him, and then he'd go back again. And one morning, Joel came down for breakfast, and for whatever reason, maybe Lunkin was early, maybe Joel was late getting up, but he suddenly realized that Lunkin had come and gone, and he'd missed him. And he was completely distraught by the fact that he'd missed Lunkin. And he dashed out of the house, and he just lay sobbing Lunkin under the door for about, 5 minutes or something. Just lay sobbing Lunkin. It's not even a word, is it? And yet it conveys so much emotion. In the same way, writes Paul, the Spirit helps us in our weaknesses. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. There are times when the words give out. There are times in our lives when we just don't have the words to pray articulately for the things that are worrying us. And yet this verse in Romans chapter 8, verse 26, on page 1135, It's not quite 11:35, is it? You can look at it in 8 minutes' time. On page 11:35 in your pew Bibles, it reminds us that even when our words give out, even when there are things that are too deep to talk about, God is still working in our lives. Well, the letter as a whole, as I said, is about relationship. It's about Paul's relationship with certainly the church in Philippi, and possibly Epaphras sort of came from several churches, because he's also mentioned in the letter from the Colossians as being somebody who wrestles in prayer for those people day and night. So maybe he's a sort of a regional worker, I don't know. But he's come with the gift, and now Paul is sending him back with a thank you letter. At least it will be a thank you letter when Paul finally finishes what he's writing about. And he says, you know, you're one of the first churches that ever had a relationship like with me like this, where you give and I receive in this way. He said, you haven't had a lot of cash. One of the poorest churches that he founded. And yet he said, this is something special. And you'll see if you read later on in chapter 4, the way in which the gift that's given and received is an important point in mediating that relationship between Paul and the church. One of the things that he says here is that God is able to meet all of their needs. My God will meet all of your needs according to his riches in Christ Jesus. It's one of the most open-ended promises in the whole of the New Testament. We love the promise, don't we? What we often forget is that the promise is given to a group of givers, a group of people who had given way beyond what they could reasonably afford. And I think it's important if we're thinking about developing the relationship with God, to remember that the relationship involves lots and lots of different things. It involves God's people. It involves our giving. So often we want the bit of the relationship that says, you know, I will call and God will answer. And we want that bit of the relationship. And God is not averse to that. God wants to answer us. There's no question about that. But it's not just about my calling and God's answering. And you know, if you want to really develop your prayer life, I would say, how's your bank book going? How's your giving going? How are those aspects of your relationship with God going as well? And because of the giving, there is thanksgiving. The verse that we've got says, you make known your needs to God with prayer and petition with thanksgiving. And of course, thanksgiving does a lot, doesn't it? It's not just we with our kids. We teach them, don't we? One of the rules, we do have rules, is about saying please and thank you, isn't it? And parents spend ages trying to get, you know, simple things like please and thank you into the sentences, into the vocabulary, and then into common usage, don't they? And there are reasons for that. One of the reasons, of course, is that being grateful and saying thank you a lot actually turns the relationship from one of dependency to one of sharing. So often, you know, we can go to God and we can say to God, thank you, because actually we've been in a mess like this before and he got us out of it before. And to remember to be thankful is an important part of building that relationship. It's not just about a list of things that we're asking God to do for us. So why does it take so long for us to learn these lessons? I particularly wanted to do this talk because 2 or 3 years ago, I get stressed about certain things. I realize there are things that don't stress me at all that would stress anybody else out of their mind. And there are things that stress me a lot that other people wouldn't get stressed at all about. And 2 or 3 years ago, I had a difficult thing with my nationality. I had dual nationality at the time. And it was just becoming more and more complicated in terms of who I had to spend money with to fill in forms, to get stuff done. And it took me a long time to work it through. And in the end, I got it sorted out. And I just have one nationality, just as we vote not to be Europeans again. And so I discovered that once again, I have an interesting sort of nationality narrative going on in my life. And as I was worrying about it, one of my brothers said to me, he said, Tess, he said, you really have to just get a hold of this passage in Philippians. He said, you just have to get a hold of it until it really means something to you, until you really can let go of the anxiety. And it took a long time on that particular one. I wouldn't say I don't occasionally have a sinking feeling when I think about the nationality issue, but I have seen God at work helping me through a difficult time. And I thought, right, I'm ready to speak on this now. You know, I've spent several years working through something. And so I get put on to do this. And then God says, right, well, we'll see how good you are at this. And there's a whole bunch of other worries that I hadn't thought were going to come along that sort of fall in the middle of our laps over the last few months. And I find that I'm back to square one again, having to learn what this passage really means. Why does that happen? Maybe I'm just really slow, but I suspect that that is an experience that most of us have, that we never really learn this one fully. And it's almost as which have a case of which having learned it in English, you have to learn it in another language, and then another language. And we learn it in the language of work, and then God says, well, how about the language of family? Can you really, with prayer, petition, thanksgiving, can you really know the peace of God that passes all understanding? What about in the work environment? Let's try that one on you. And so often we think we've got it cracked. We think we're on top of it. And then God says, okay, so let's try it this way. And I suspect that the whole Christian life is about learning the same basic relationship lessons over and over again in ever deeper and more profound ways. One of the books that I was thinking of when I was preparing this was a book called The Practice of the Presence of God. I've got some copies here. I bought them, so no, they're free. I'm happy for people to have them, but please don't have them, take them home, and then leave them on a bookshelf. Do what Alison did. She's now got a list of people that she borrowed one, and she's going to give it to several other people when she's finished. Okay, and that's what books are for. Okay, they're not for keeping on bookshelves; they're for passing on. Christian books, anyway. There may be books that are best kept on bookshelves, but these books, Christian books, on the whole, are best passed around. And this is quite a new release. The translation is not a new one, and it's about a French monk. Except he wasn't a monk. He wasn't allowed to be a monk because he didn't know Latin. And so he had to become a lay monk. And before that, he'd been in the military, and he'd injured his leg, and he was quite a clumsy character. And he'd lost a job that he had before in service, and eventually he goes to the monastery, and he is really distressed about the fact that he's not really useful for anything. And they realize that they can't do much with him because he's so clumsy. And they put him in the kitchen, and eventually he ends up in the garden looking after the vegetables. And there he starts to talk to God. He starts to realize that God is real. And he says, God is there, but I'm not always aware of that. So I have to practice God being there. And I will talk to God as though he's there. And when I find myself getting distressed about things, and he'd had to go to the market and buy stuff and bring it back. He said, if I've blown it, he said, I don't get upset. He said, I don't get anxious. He said, I just call myself back and remind myself that God is with me each step of the day. And as I was talking to Alison beforehand, she said the thing that had really struck her about this book was the fact that we often think that in our day and age we're different. Christian challenges are different. And she said this reminded her that this monk, maybe 350 years ago, had learned a secret that we still have to learn today. So it won't take us this morning to learn this lesson. We won't even learn it in the series on prayer that's coming up. It may take us months, may take us years to really start walking with God day by day. And whatever else you do this morning, I'd like you to promise yourself that you're going to spend some time in the week just praying to God as though God were next to you in whatever situations you find yourself in. that you just weave the prayer into the everyday, the quiet moments, the moments that nobody knows about, because that's where your strength in the relationship is. It's all about keeping that dialogue going. The story, isn't there, about a little girl who came home from school, and her mum says, "How did it go today?" And she said, "Well, not very well. I have to go back tomorrow." And I think at times we want to be able to just crack these things and to say, "I've got it cracked. No more worry for me. No more of this." And God says, "No, you've learned it one way. Now let's try it the other way." Because if heaven is anything at all, it's all about that relationship. So what's this verse telling us? Well, I think it's telling us that prayer is something very ordinary. I think on the whole, we elevate prayer to something which is almost impossible, something that we have to screw up our whole will to be able to do well, something that requires long words and long periods of silence. And I don't think that that's true. I think that there are times for prayers with long words, and there are times for prayers out of silence. But prayer is something very ordinary. But it does have extraordinary outcomes. But that's not because of us. That's because of God, and because he's amazingly powerful. So, take the verse away. You can't deal with it today. You can start dealing with it tomorrow morning in the stresses that come your way. And I wish you all the best as you do that. Thanks very much indeed, Helen.